This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto news, exclusive interviews, real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, one of my favorite guys in the auto industry is a man named Carl Brower. He is the executive publisher of all things Kelley Blue Book, Auto Trader, and Dealer.com, and he is on the line with us. We are car brethren. I think I could say that, Carl. How you doing, buddy?
Brethren. I don't know if it's brethren, but certainly brethren. But I am doing fabulously, Alan. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Well, you know, here's what I'm wondering. The 18 months has passed, and you know what I'm talking about. Do you know what I'm talking about? Come on. Think about it. He's going, what the hell are you doing? I'll tell you what it is.
Oh, I know. I know what it is. I know what it is. Yeah. I do know what it is. Is it a hellacious time frame we're talking about here?
Yes, even more so. It's a demonic time frame because...
It's a demonic time frame,
The demon. When we bought our demons, we own Dodge Demons, and our show is brought to you in part by Dodge here, but both Carl and I are completely lunatic fringe car guys. I mean, we're that kind of crazy. Carl, not only does he have a Dodge Demon, he's got... a Ford GT, which is, I mean, that you have gone over, my friend. You have completely gone over the edge. But I say that in all jealousy. But in order to buy this car, we had to like promise not to sell it for 18 months. My 18 months passed just earlier this week. So, same thing with your GT. You can't sell it for at least a year, right?
2 years.
2 years. 2 years. Oh, see? So, supercars. And cars of this special nature are so special that they make you sign contracts and agreements when they sell them to you. It's kind of like, I've heard this with Ferrari that, you know, it's like, you know, they won't just sell a new Ferrari just to anybody. You got to like, you have to have owned one or, you know, I don't know what the criteria is because I'm not a Ferrari guy. But it's getting weird that these specialty cars, you know, you got to kind of be somebody to get one. I get that. I'm somebody, I got one. But now it's like, now I'm going, all right, can I sell it? Should I sell it? I think that, you know, of course, the Demon is a very special one-year-only car. They only made 3,300 of them worldwide, and I think at least five of them have crashed already. So now there's 3,295. But it's a low-production car. I'm thinking I might sell it because it's like such a bodacious car that maybe I sell it and buy something different, like a new GT500 from Ford. Well, anyway, it's all right. Shelby GT500. I got my eye on one.
See, which means you're part of the problem, Alan. You're the guy who's flipping cars every 18 months, thus justifying car companies creating their newest, latest whiz-bang, gotta-have-it car every 18 months, which is kind of the whole point, right? Should car companies and can car companies keep increasing not just the car's performances, but the rate at which they're making these kind of super special limited versions of already supposedly super special limited cars?
Well, and here's
the thing. And we've seen this for years.
I like owning a car that is cool, that is special, that everybody goes, oh my gosh, that's a fill in the blank. In my case, it was... You know, the Dodge Viper ACR, which is extreme aero package with the big wings. And everybody's like, what is that thing? Oh, it's an ACR. Oh, it's an ACR. It's an ACR. Fastest car, 13 racetracks, set records. And then they stopped making it. I'm like, oh, what the heck? Do I keep it?
Yeah.
You know, so I actually just sold it. And you know what? I got all my money back. I sold it. Got all my money back. When does that happen when you buy a brand new car? When you buy a specialty car. I think that's when that happens. Right. Or a collectible piece. Like, my guess is 2 years from now, you'll do fine on your GT. I know you did good on your last GT. You made money. This is a rare time in history, Carl, and that's what we should be talking about right now. And I'm going to take a break, and us Ferris Bueller's Day Off guys are going to completely jones on some of the cars we're wanting. The new Corvette they're going to be showing next month, finally. I'm kind of thinking it might be 900 horsepower. I might have to have one. We're talking with Carl Brower from Kelley Blue Book, Auto Trader and Dealer.com. He's the executive publisher. He's a lunatic fringe human being like myself when it comes to cars. We'll take a break, talk supercars on the other side.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
So the big question is, when a car maker makes these specialty cars, at what point should they just give up and quit doing it? I mean, I don't know. Look at what's happened with Dodge and the Challenger. They cannot make enough of those things. They keep on making new, different models, the Red Eye, the Demon, the 392, which on and on and on. I don't even know how to name them all. But that car is too legit to quit still. Carl Brower joining us. I don't know. I don't know how they can reinvent that car. I got to tell you, it's funny. I don't know if you saw the April Fool's joke they did with the ghoul. Did you hear about that one?
Yeah.
It was like somebody made a joke that they were going to make I think it was like 1,000 horsepower version of the Hellcat Demon, and it was going to be called like a ghoul. And it was going to be $200,000. And I bet there were people there going, I'm going to buy one. And yeah. But it was an April Fool's thing. So I don't know. You know, they're doing a good job. Go ahead.
Let me first say, you know, you talked about the 18 months, right? And that's basically hit now. So in theory, we have the option we didn't have until now to sell the Demon if we want to, now that we've had it a year and a half. Now, I've got that car, and as you mentioned, I've got another car that costs even more, like 6 times more than the Demon. Right. And I'm not a wealthy guy. You know this. I'm not made of money, despite what people would think when you hear these names. It's taken some pretty creative financial work on my side to have both those cars in my garage at the same time. Right. It would be very helpful to me on a sleeping at night stress level to let the Demon go and get back the money I could get back out of that car. The problem is, Alan, is that every time I drive it or even just think about it, I realize this car is a moment in time. It's a special, special car. And what you have to remember with all these special cars is, no matter what crazy performance number any given car pulls at any minute or moment in time, it will be eclipsed eventually. That is not what decides how well a car holds up. It's not the car's performance numbers. It's the complete package. It's everything around the car and how unique it was at the time it came out. That's what holds up over long periods, and that's what keeps a car's value. That's why the Ford GT, which was by no means, the 0506 Ford GT was by no means the fastest car in the shed by the time 2007, 2008 hit. Within a couple of years, right, it had been eclipsed by a lot of cars. It never lost its value. Why? Because it was a mid-engine V8 performance car built and designed in America, and that was very unique. The Demon is the first car to pull all these crazy numbers, including the front wheels off the ground, not to mention all these other things.
Right.
No matter how much quicker muscle cars get after the Demon, that car did all that stuff first.
Right.
And that will keep it special for all time. Plus, let's just get away from the theoretical for a second. You and I both know this too. The car's a blast to drive. It's just an amazing vehicle to experience. The kind of performance and power, you just roll into the throttle, and every time you're like, holy crap, you know, all that 808 or 840, if you got high octane gas in it,
right,
horsepower combined with the torque and everything else it does, it's an amazing vehicle. So yeah. My first point I want to make is, in spite of the fact it would help me if I got rid of the Demon in multiple other areas, I don't think I'm going to let that car go.
Really?
It's just like my 0506 was. Oh. It's too special.
Yeah.
It's a special car, and it will hold that in no matter how fast the GT500 and whatever comes next. That car was a moment in time.
Mm.
My second point, though, is that what makes cars special is that Chrysler doesn't spit out a Demon every other year. Even the Red Eye that followed it up didn't have nearly the special pedigree that went into the Dodge Demon.
Right.
And it's when car companies start spitting out what they're claiming are super special cars every 6, 12, 18, whatever the rate is, months. It starts to wear on even this expensive, overpriced, overmoneyed group of guys who are always looking for the next big deal special car. And I've heard feedback from people from various exotic brands going, you know, I kind of wanted to get this new whiz-bang one they're advertising, but I've now learned that I will be obsolete and my car will be obsolete somewhere between 6 to 18 months after I get it.
Yeah.
Maybe
and
I don't
and
want
they may
car.
Have spent $2.5-3 million for some of these Bugattis and things like that and Koenigseggs and whatever else, right?
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So that's the thing to keep in mind is, you know, I referenced you when we talked earlier about the Incredibles movie, right? You know, and the big villain in that movie's whole point, which I think some people lose, but I think it's an incredibly good point, which is when everyone is special, nobody's special. And you can transfer that to cars, too. When every car is special, no car is special. So as automakers, just a little feedback from someone who you may not even care what he has to say, but don't over-special it because then none of them are special.
Well,
so be careful.
What do you think about the new Corvette coming out, though? Now, this is, to me, another one of those moments in time when they've, for the history of Corvette, made it a front engine, and all of a sudden, now you've got a mid-engine, completely redesigned cars, and the rumors are 900 horsepower, maybe more. We'll talk on the other side a little bit more. I got my eye on the new Corvette. I got my eye on the new Toyota Supra. I got my eye on a couple different things, and I don't know what's going to be in my garage next. We'll see. Right now, it's a 73 Blazer, which is crazy. We'll talk more with Carl Brower on the other side. You're listening to The Drive. Get your act together. We could be just fine. I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. Don't tell me what you want, what you really, really want. I wanna. Brembo has been stopping champions on the track as well as drivers like you and me on the street for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE-equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Our show brought to you in part by Brembo, the choice of champions, Brembo Brakes. And you know, you can get a lot of aftermarket parts for your aftermarket brake applications. They've got a new Brembo store. Check it out, Brembo.com. Talking with my buddy Carl Brower, he and I are both Dodge Demon owners. Very rare cars, very, very rare cars. Not everybody knows what they are. Dodge used to say, when they first started talking about this car, if you know, you know. 840 horsepower, like Carl said, pops a wheelie. A factory car with a warranty and everything that'll pop a wheelie? This is insanity. But that's why we bought it. So I was talking about the Corvette. What do you know about the Corvette, Carl? What do you think about it?
Well, first of all, I know what you had alluded to earlier, which is that it's the first time the car is going to have a mid-engine. And this has been rumored since, you know, the original, one of the original designers of the Corvette 50, 60 years ago has been, had dreamed of moving it to a mid-engine platform. And now it's going to arrive.
Right.
And we're going to hear about it almost exactly a month from now. It's the mid-July as they're going to unveil it to all of us. And I think that's huge. That is a moment in time. A brand as well known and as popular as the Corvette getting its first mid-engine layout is a huge deal. But, however, keep in mind, how many other cliches can I come up with? they're going to build a fair number of those. And you can bet the first one will not be the, for lack of a better term, as we've been saying, most special one. It will be the volume one. The crazy killer 900 horsepower one that's been rumored that you alluded to, even if that ever hits, it's not going to hit or even probably be revealed next month. And it might be 2 more years before that hits. And anyone who knows cars knows this is the way these car companies do this, right? They unveil the cars, but rarely do they come out with the highest version, highest performance version, most special, limited production version. That's always used to keep juicing interest in the vehicle.
Right, they've got to reignite interest if it falls off a little bit, and they hold back that. Just like with the Ford Shelby GT500, they keep saying more than 700 horsepower. I asked a guy yesterday from Ford Motor Company. Come on, tell me. Just tell me. Just come on. Give me. Tell me. Tell me. Tell me. Tell me. He goes, more than 700. I go, come on. Nope. I was going to throw him off the deck, yeah. Believe me. But he's like, nope. So, you know, it's they're holding it. That way it'll be, woohoo, look at that, 750. Whatever, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Corvette's going to be a big deal just having a mid-engine. Yep. And there will be iterations of it down the line that will be even more capable with that mid-engine as a foundation, as the platform they're starting with.
Right.
So the car's going to be an incredibly good car. And what I'm curious more about than performance is the cost. Because if the numbers I'm hearing on the, at least the base level one, to get a mid-engine V8-powered car at the numbers that I'm hearing rumored that they're going to offer it at a starting point, that could be quite amazing. But then again, your flip side of that is, if it's really that good a deal, they'll build as many as people want. A lot of people will want them. They'll be all over the place. And now, you know, it's the whole thing. To me, that's always the trick. The trick is getting the car that everyone wants, but the company actually used some level of restraint and didn't build as many as they want. They could have built a lot more Ford GTs, the new one, but they didn't. They could have built a lot more Dodge Demons, but they didn't. Right. That's the trick, is to get those cars that they don't actually build as many as they could have easily built, and their demand would have been there.
So you know the old story about how do you catch, you know, one of those spider monkeys? You put a peanut in a little, in a hole that the monkey reaches in the hole, grabs a peanut, will not let go of it. Its hand makes it to where now the monkey can't get its hand out of the little hole that the peanut was in. And so then you walk right up and you catch the monkey. And I think that, you know, I have been that guy that held on to my cars too long. And then I ended up losing on them because that's what happened, what you just described, which they all of a sudden everybody had one. But there was a little window of time. And I'm wondering with our demons if that is where we are right now, where it's worth quite a bit of money. I mean, I've seen these demons for sale for $250,000. Now, that guy's obviously nuts, smoking crack, maybe doing a little, you know, heroin. I don't know. But, you know, that's ridiculous. But I think they're probably worth maybe 150 or 40 or 30. That's what they happen to be selling for at auctions. I don't want to hold on to it too long where I can't have enjoyed it, got my money back, and maybe even made money. So, I mean, look, I'm a car guy. I'm a real car guy. I don't get paid to be a car guy. I'm lucky that I get paid to be a car guy. But first, I've owned wrecking yards. I quit school to go play with cars. I am a car guy first. I'm not, I don't want to be a dumb car guy. I want to be a smart car guy. I want to have my cake and eat it too. I want to have icing all over my face from eating that cake. You know what I mean? And so it's like, do I sell? What do you think? Should I sell it? Because I'm not in love. I love it, yes. But I'm going to be in love with, like Carroll Shelby said, what's the best Shelby you ever made? He said, the next one.
Right.
What do you think?
And that's usually the way it works. And so that's why everyone struggles. Every car guy who's got a special car struggles with everything you just described.
Yeah.
But there's two components, right? There's how much you personally like the car, regardless of its market value, and how much you care about its market value. And you got to keep those two in mind. And my attitude with the Demon is, even if I can't make as much money on it 2, 3, 5 years from now, it just will never be worth nothing. It's never going to drop to half or even probably 2/3 of what I paid for it.
Right, right.
So I don't feel like I'm ever going to take a bath on it, even if I can't make as much
on it. Right, but your value is joy of ownership. That's your value. My value is I got kids and now grandkids. I want to pay for those little kids' stuff. I want to buy them toys, and I still want to have a cool car. So if I can make a profit, damn, I'm happy at owning that car and doing everything I've done with it. I spun it 105 miles an hour, and I live to talk about it. We'll talk more on the other side with Carl Brower. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Drive. Real Car Guys.
It's Dodge Performance Days, where that new car smell gets replaced by the scent of burned rubber. With Dodge Charger and its available best-in-class 485 horsepower, Dodge Challenger Hellcat Redeye with up to 797 horsepower and 707 pound-feet of torque, and the powerful 7-passenger Dodge Durango. Hurry in for great deals now at Dodge Performance Days. Warrants large regular car vehicle segment. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC. This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Real car guys and gals, because BJ's coming up next. Talking about cars and trucks and SUVs and things that car people talk about in a real way. Because you know what? A lot of times this is the conversation that happens behind the curtain. But the reality is that, you know, I mean, some of these cars these days are expensive, man. When you talk about buying a, you know, $150,000 Dodge Challenger, because that's all it is, a Dodge Challenger that costs, you can buy a brand new one for $28,000, brand new. But it's not going to have, you know, 840 horsepower. But it's still, you could make it look just like my car if you put some different wheels on it and the flares and, you know, a few things. But it's like, somebody's going to pay 150 grand or so for that car. Serial number 8. It's for sale. Give me a call. Anyway, and I just sold my my ACR, and I had it for 3.5 years, Carl. 3.5 years. It went by like nothing. And every time the guy sends me a picture, you know, it's like he sends me, he got it. He's, you know, he went to Florida. He sends me a picture. And I'm like, yeah. It's like I get a stomachache, you know? But I think it's a good stomachache because you got to keep moving, man. It's like, you know, I have one wife like you. We're getting ready to celebrate our 33rd anniversary of being married, 38 years together. I got one wife, but I got to have a lot of cars. I got to have some, I got to have a little variety in the car section. But anyway, can we talk a little bit about performance SUVs? I yesterday drove the new 2020 Ford Explorer ST along with other people. I cannot tell you yet this weekend about the driving impressions because it's embargoed. But what I can tell you is the new ST has 400 horsepower in the 3-liter EcoBoost twin turbo V6. And I will tell you, hauls ass. So performance SUVs, they're really making a big difference.
It's crazy. It freaks me out. Like it's almost disturbing. Okay, we've got a BMW X5, the new X5, here at Kelley Blue Book in the test fleet. And I've driven that thing multiple times now. And I mean, Alan, this is not a small vehicle. Okay, it does not weigh a small amount. And you put it in sport mode and you turn the wheel and you roll on the throttle and you hit the brakes. And it's kind of like you're sitting in a high Miata. You know, like I feel like I'm sitting in an elevated height Miata. The responsiveness this thing provides like I said, it's almost disturbing. You're like, how is this doing this? Right. You know? And so, and I've noted, and about a month ago we had an X7, which is even bigger. It's the bigger version of an X5 with 3 rows of seats in it. And the same thing, that one was also kind of, you know, freaking me out and scaring me and disturbing me. I'm like, what is this thing doing?
Yeah.
It weighs too much for this. So that's what I've noticed is that.
Well, and add that to what Dodge has done with their Hellcat engine, 707 horsepower, putting it in the Trackhawk Jeep Grand Cherokee. Yep. That is insane at such a fantastic level. It should not even be legal, but it is. Right. That's what's so great about it. But again, you're talking $100,000. You know.
Well, but even the SRT version of the Durango, which is a similar platform, but it's even bigger and heavier than the Grand Cherokee, and it's got 3 rows of seats in it. But it doesn't have a Hellcat engine. But even the highest performance version of the SRT Durango is kind of disturbing in how quickly it turns its wheel and how quickly the car responds when you give any kind of input to it. It just, these cars are too big to be doing this, at least on any kind of rational level. Right. And I'll tell you, you go back to, again, like moments in time and specialness. When I first got my 05 Ford GT, we ran 0 to 60 numbers on it, and it was 3.7. And then I put the stage one upgrades, and it was 3.5. In 05, 06, you could count on one hand how many cars could hit 0 to 60 in like 3.5 seconds. Multiple SUVs can hit that. The Hellcat-powered Grand Cherokee that you just mentioned with all-wheel drive, it'll hit 3.5, and you don't have to be on a drag strip to do it. You just pick a street that you're allowed to get up to 60 on and floor it, and all four of those wheels claw at the pavement, and you're there in 3.5 seconds. It's a Grand Cherokee.
It's the most wonderful thing. I mean, I thought I liked creme brulee. Not anymore. I thought I liked, you know, a lot of strange things. But after driving that car, it's like I can actually lose weight now because I don't have to go to the comfort foods. I go to my comfort cars now. And there's so many different good ones, you know.
Yes.
So the other thing is that, you know, then you have the exotics out there, like Maserati making one, Lamborghini making one. Of course, Porsche makes a couple of them that are fantastic. Everybody's making a performance SUV. And then the other day, a Cadillac CT6, is that the big sedan, drove by? Is that the
yes.
big? Yeah. And I was standing at the airport, and of course, now I'm going to get in a taxi, and this beautiful Cadillac CT6 pulls up. And I wanted to say to the guy, hey, can I ride with you? I want to take a ride in that car. I think there was a language barrier, though. But anyway, the point is that this was a beautiful machine. Absolutely. And so I literally had to walk out into the street to catch a glimpse of it from, you know, away from the curb. But the sedans are going away, but they're getting really, really good right as their life is coming to an end. You know what I mean? So SUVs are taking over. You know,
I know exactly what you mean. I agree 100%. I was driving, I think one of the new Accords recently. No, it was the Mazda 6. I was driving the new Mazda 6 in the last week. And what went through my head after I'd taken it on a short drive and all came back, it's really sad that sedans are dying, because they have gotten this is one of the best sedans I've ever driven. And it's like a $30,000 sedan. And it's an amazing vehicle that gives you everything you'd ever want. But, oh, God, it's a sedan. Who wants to buy one of those? It's really depressing.
Well, I was there with another guy, and I said to him, that's the CT6. It's got Super Cruise, which is like semi-autonomous. It's got all-wheel drive. And I'm like, that is the ultimate luxury sedan right there. And I don't know how much they are and everything, but, God, that was a beautiful – the car looked like a piece of jewelry. So, I mean, we're at that stage where, man, design is at its best. Engineering is at its best. Technology is at its best. Safety is at its best. Horsepower at its best. Can it get any better? Cars flying?
Fuel efficiency. Right. Fuel efficiency is at its best, too. All these things do this and even get decent mileage. And I'll tell you, I think the CT6 is arguably one of the most underrated vehicles on the market right now. All the capabilities you just said, and its looks, it weighs hundreds of pounds less than the competitive set, and nobody buys one. It's really
it's
sad.
Bizarre. All right, hang tight. One more. We got to talk about more stuff. I know Le Mans. Come on, let's get talking about Le Mans.
Oh,
right? I'm talking with Carl Brower from Kelley Blue Book, Auto Trader and Dealer.com. He's the executive publisher over there. KBB.com, Autotrader.com. You dealers, check out dealer.com. We'll be right back. It is The Drive.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor.
Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel costs, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com. You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor with my buddy Carl Brower from Kelley Blue Book, Autotrader and Dealer.com. Our show brought to you in part by Subaru, the all-new three-row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. And you know, with that four-cylinder engine, that vehicle tows 5,000 pounds. It's amazing. We've been talking about, you know, engineering, technology. The other thing is I just drove, Carl, the Ford Explorer. And I can't talk about driving impressions, but I will talk about a couple things here before we get on to Le Mans. The four-cylinder 2.3 EcoBoost engine tows 5,000 pounds. These are four-cylinder engines towing 5,000 pounds. It's craziness.
I love technology.
I know. And it's plenty of power, 300-plus horsepower. It's amazing what they're doing with all this engineering and 10-speed transmission and that thing. Loved it. Anyway.
Ford's doing a lot. Hey, you're talking to someone who spent a sizable chunk of change on a 3.5-liter V6-powered supercar. Yeah. That plenty of, well, not particularly well-educated people, I'll just put it that way, still want, oh, it doesn't have a... It's like, yeah, you're right. And if I didn't, and if you didn't know what its engine size was and you drove it and you listened to it, you'd think it was the greatest car in the world.
Well,
so,
speaking of the greatest car in the world, Le Mans, maybe you could give us a little of what's going on there. That's happening this weekend.
It is happening. And it's so exciting to me because you've got what we were just talking about, you know, really great supercars from all these manufacturers, Mercedes and Aston Martin and Porsche. And of course, Ford's been factory sponsoring four teams at Le Mans for the last 3 years. This is their fourth year, and it is their official final year, just like in the 60s. They did it from 66 to 69. Actually, they only did it in 66, 67, and then privateers did it in 68 and 69 and still won Le Mans 4 years in a row. But they did it for 4 years. This is their final one. And the cars have got a new livery on them that pay homage to those original 4 years from the 60s. So you've got a golf blue one running around. You've got a black one with white pinstripes like the 67, and you've got a red one with some white stripes like the 60, that's the 67. The 66 was black with white. So you've got the three that represent like the vintage ones, but the same car won in 68 and 69 with the same livery, that golf livery. So they only needed three vintage liveries, and then the fourth factory sponsored Ford GT still has the newer Victory red, white, and blue one. So it worked out really well. They got four cars and they're representing all the liveries from the vintage time frame plus the new one. And then you've got a privateer running a WIN, W-Y-N-N, sponsored Ford GT in a different category, but it's the first non-Ford factory supported car. It's a dealership, and it's terrible. I'm forgetting the name. Ben, I want to say, he's one of the dealerships, I think, in the Houston area or the Dallas area.
Well, this is a 24-hour race. It's the 24 hours of Le Mans, right?
24 hours. And it's considered, you know, the Super Bowl of car racing.
This right. But it starts at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Saturday. And I'm talking to Carl on Friday afternoon, so we're just a day ahead of its start. But
that's 3 or 4 in France, by the way.
Okay,
you know,
gotcha.
8 hours ahead. So
gotcha.
So it starts at like 8 or 9 on the West Coast and like noon on in the East Coast. But yes, and it's exciting. It's exciting because it's a 24-hour durability race more than a speed race. I mean, performance and capability is important, but the teams that support it, the pit stops, the durability of the engineering, and all, that's why it's considered such a big deal race, is it goes way beyond just speed.
You went, was it last year or the year before?
I went 3 years ago. I went in 16, the first year Ford raced there, and they won.
Ah. Was that the 50th anniversary?
Awesome. That was 50 years, Alan, to the day. It was the same day of the month from 1966 in 2016 in June. On Father's Day, they won.
Oh, man. What a wild deal. What a wild deal. So who else is racing? Obviously Ford. You got Ferrari, I'm sure. Who else is in this mix?
You've got, you know, the prototype cars, and I think Toyota, I believe, qualified first. So they got Toyota in these LMP prototype cars that don't look anything like a real car, but they're very fast. And then, of course, Cadillac, I believe, has been in there.
Cadillac's been doing well, by the way, I heard. Yeah.
Yes, they've been doing extremely well with their racing effort and all. And then in some of the other categories, you've got Acura, you've got Porsche, Aston Martin, Lamborghini. I mean, if you're a fan of any brand, it's going to be hard for you not to find it racing.
All right. Let me reverse it on you. Jaguar, are they racing this year? That's a good question.
I should know. I should know that, but I don't know. I don't.
I was just wondering.
So.
I thought, who would not be in this? Jaguar having its issues right now. Nissan Infiniti having its issues right now. As you know, Ford Motor Company. Interesting. The head of global design, I think, moved over to Nissan. There's a whole bunch of stuff mixing up. Ian Callum, who's a friend of you and I both, left Jaguar. Yep. I think it was just Jaguar, wasn't it? Not Land Rover. That was something else.
He was Jaguar's guy.
But he retired or whatever he did. So there's a lot of mix-up going on right now, which is interesting because you can take a company like Kia, one of our sponsors, who's got Audi designers working over there, and all of a sudden the Kias start looking really good. You know what I mean?
That was a brilliant move on their part. I mean, they got in Peter Schrayer, and all of a sudden their cars were like looking the best of any kind of mainstream high volume car, especially from the Asian brands. And it worked. Their market share and their volume's gone up tremendously over the last 10 years.
And you know, it's funny because yesterday I was driving the new Ford Explorer. And I said to my wife, I said, hey, maybe we buy an Explorer after driving the 400 horsepower EcoBoost, tows 5,600 pounds, three rows of seats, pretty badass looking. She says, nope, I want a Kia Telluride. She is stuck on the table. And you know what she said to me? I said, come on. I go, I got to have some horsepower. She says to me, when you get in a car and it's got it, she goes, that's what I want. And that car had it for me. And I'm like, okay, the Kia Telluride it is, I guess. All right, hang tight. One more five-minute segment with you, and we're going to do a whole hour together. When does that ever happen? We'll be right back, everybody. It's The Drive.
Weird, boxy, funky, fun, iconic. You can call the Kia Soul a lot of things, but you can never call it boring. And now, with a wide variety of newly adapted trims, it's time to expand your vocabulary. The adventure-hungry Urban Explorer Soul X-Line, the stylish, tech-savvy Soul EX, and the relentlessly athletic, turbocharged Soul GT Line Turbo. The new species of Soul, the 2020 Soul. Give it everything.
Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Well, The Drive is brought to you in part by the new Kia Soul, the new species of Soul, the 2020 Soul. Give it everything. Check out the Soul. It's just a fun little car. Carl Brower joining us right now. I got to tell you, Kia, Hyundai, the Genesis, there's some brands out there that are really rising to the top. And I have a feeling, we were talking about the designers, you know, how there's kind of playing musical chairs right now, some of the designers moving around. All of a sudden, the guy who's in charge of, I think it was Lincoln and Ford and Lincoln, is now moving over to Nissan. What do you think of that? Just curious.
I think that's the world we live in. I think the automotive industry has never been more dynamic, and it's facing the next 5 to 10 years, the most disruptive time frame in its history, between connected cars, electric cars, and autonomous cars. Any one of those paradigm shifts of technology would have been enough for disruption, and all three are hitting in effectively the same decade. So I think if you think you've got this company figured out or this person's career trajectory figured out, you're crazy. There's too much disruption going on to bet on anything, except that you can't bet on anything and that change is constant.
So talking about change being constant, a lot of our friends that are car guys that work in these manufacturing world, designers and engineers and all these different things, they are shifting around, but some of them are going over to these electric car companies like Rivian. And then, of course, you know, Rivian is in the news, and it's quiet for a couple of months. And maybe it's not been months, maybe it's only been weeks. But what do you make of these new car companies, and how will Kelley Blue Book, I mean, when will they add the car to the Blue Book or, you know, KBB.com? When does that happen, when a new car company sprouts up? I mean, that's an interesting thought.
It's a great question. It's funny you're saying this because, you know, we were just talking about Rivian this morning here and like how we're going to start having to prep the product pages,
right?
Because that's what we do at Kelley. We feature all the vehicle information, the specs, the features, the options, and of course the pricing, so you know how to configure it and how much it's going to cost you. And it's tricky when you have one or two, let alone multiple, as you just said. There's new companies springing up all over the place. So it adds to our challenge because we have to go to the company and we have to say, all right, when is your car going to be on sale and when will you have the information for us? Hopefully one happens before the other, i.e. the information's available before the car goes on sale,
right?
Because all the potential shoppers would like to be able to investigate this car, you know, before the first day it's in the showroom. And it's something that we have to, you know, basically chase down on a consistent basis. And Rivian's one we were just talking about this morning, getting those pages ready. So it's a dynamic car world, like I just said, and it certainly doesn't make it boring, as I think you would agree, Alan. Nobody sits around twiddling their thumbs saying they wish something was going on in the car world, because there's always a bunch going on in the car world.
Right. Well, so when they come out with these new cars, how long does it take before you can find out, you know, a book value, dare I say, because that's usually for the used car value. It must take some time before something goes across the auction block, or how does that work?
Another great question. So what we do is, if you have an established brand like a Toyota, right, and it's got a traditionally high resale value, even if they've got a brand new model, like say a Supra that hasn't existed for 20 plus years,
right,
and you're trying to figure out what it's worth, you can take general Toyota background and history on products, and then you can cross that with segment history, cars like that, other sports cars like that, and pricing in that range. And with all of our brainiacs in the data department, they can come up with a number that is pretty accurate almost all the time. You know, wow. We can get a pretty good idea of what's going to go on. It gets, then now you add in another layer, like say Rivian. Okay, now you can't even start with a history of the brand, because right, there is no history for the brand.
Right.
So then you got to look at things like EVs, and you got to look at things
Tesla,
like trucks.
Right.
But of course,
yeah.
Right. But of course, there hasn't been a truck EV yet.
Oh,
so there
right.
again, you got.
What a
so,
mess.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to lie and act like we can unwind and re-engineer or de-engineer, reverse engineer anything. At some point, you just have to start, you know, taking everything that you've got on data and then
right.
combine it with just some knowledge and wisdom your data analysts have over time and come up with some numbers. But it's never boring, that's for sure, when it's doing that, when that kind of stuff's going on.
All right, give me 30 seconds on this new content site you guys have, KBB.
We've got ride.com by KBB, and it's basically a technology personal mobility site. So you can go there and learn all about scooters and apps and autonomous vehicles and EVs. It's all the new breaking transportation technology. That's what it's all about.
So it's www.ride.com.
Ride.tech.
Tech.
We're on
okay.
the tech because we're it's the technology. So it's RIDE.TECH, ride.tech. People should
right.
check it out.
Carl Brower, thank you so much. Kelley Blue Book continues to evolve, and they're a great asset for all dealers and consumers alike. I'm Alan Taylor. Thank you, Carl. We'll be back with another hour right
on.
After this. All right, appreciate it. Don't go anywhere.
The big news from Subaru is the three-row Ascent. It's the biggest SUV from Subaru ever. There's room for 7 or 8 passengers with a choice of second-row captain's chairs or bench seating. It'll tow up to 5,000 pounds. It has interior space you need for your whole crew. And it gets you where you want to go with the safety of a Subaru, including standard symmetrical all-wheel drive. The three-row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Maximum towing capacity varies by trim level, and trailer brakes may be required. See your retailer for details.
This show is presented in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Auto News. Exclusive interviews. Real-world test drives. It's your turn to step into the driver's seat. This is The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
And you know, I've got also another automotive expert, television and radio host, BJ Colleen, joining me. All right, but the question is, can you do a real-world test drive review? That's the question, BJ.
I think you know the answer to that.
So let me tell you, I was talking to Carl Brower in the last hour from Kelley Blue Book.
Just my buddy Carl.
Love that
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
And I was telling him that I just drove the new Ford Explorer and the ST. You know, I'm a gearhead. Everybody knows that. The ST Ford Explorer, 400 horsepower with a 3-liter V6 engine. 3 liter is a small engine. V6, but it's got EcoBoost twin turbocharge, 400 horsepower with a 10-speed transmission, hauls butt. So I call my wife and I go, I know you got your heart set on the Kia Telluride, because she hasn't stopped talking about it, and I'm hoping that they'll have a sale on them at some point, but it doesn't look like they're going to.
Not for a while.
I said, maybe we could consider the Ford Explorer because the ST's got some horsepower. It was really nice to drive. She's like, look, the Kia Telluride's got the it for me. And I go, what do you mean the it? She goes, you get in it and it's just, it has got what you want. It's got everything you want, where it is. It's intuitive. And she's like, she's giving me this kind of what you want to hear from a consumer, which is this vehicle, after I drove it, because this is after she drove it, did not leave her frustrated, because there's a lot of frustration with all this technology. It's like, oh, it had too much of this, and the lane departure warning stuff was a steering wheel doing stuff. And it's like, oh, turn that off. I don't know how to turn it off. Turn the radio on. I don't know how to turn the radio on. It's like, you know, honestly,
yeah.
She got out of that Range Rover that was so complicated.
Oh, yeah.
You felt like you're in a movie when you're driving it. You're like, I don't know how to turn the radio on. you know? But
it's true.
So anyway, she loved it, but I understand you've been driving it. I'm waiting to hear your impressions.
We have a little bit of a leg up when it comes to Kia because we own the Kia Sedona minivan. And so, you know, it's nice because you get in a Kia and you kind of know how all the features and functions work because they're real good about being uniform across the line, which is a big deal because you get in some manufacturers' vehicles and then this one doesn't look like that one and you can't figure it out. But Kia, they get it, you know, they understand. And so we love our Sedona, so I couldn't wait to get in the Telluride. As a matter of fact, all of my friends and my realtor up here, they all wanted to get in the Telluride. I'd take everybody for rides all the way around the town because everybody knew about it. Everybody wanted to get in. I think I sold like five of them. Right. I was even at the parking lot at Whole Foods. Guy chased me down and he goes, hey, can you tell me about that car? You know, so I'm filling him in. And he goes, man, I wish my wife knew as much about cars as you do.
Right. He doesn't know he's talking.
I've been doing it 35 years, you know. So
right.
Like, I said, just Google me. You'll get everything you need to know about me. But it was funny. So I've been driving the Telluride around and I had the dark moss color, which is really cool. It's kind of like, you know, we've been fighting. Is it green? Is it brown? It's a little bit, to me, it's green, but some guys see it as brown. You know, we see different colors.
Isn't
but,
that funny?
Yeah, and I know you guys have reviewed the Telluride to death because it is the newest, hottest, coolest vehicle right. out there. And so I got my chance to get in it. And, you know, I'm probably not going to say anything that you guys haven't said before because it really is. It's beautiful. It's roomy. It's comfortable. It's got every feature you can imagine, you know, from the outstanding audio system. You know, they got the Harman Kardon audio system in there. To the memory function on the seats and, you know, the surround view cameras and the parking distance warning features. I mean, it just goes on and on and on
right,
and on.
Right.
You know, it has a great ride. You can change it from sport to comfort mode. And I drove it from Vegas to L.A. And I like the comfort mode, but I put it in the sport mode. That's just I like a little bit stiffer feel overall to the steering and the suspension and things like that.
Right.
So, but, you know, there really is anything you can want. You know, it's fun because when you talk to other people about the vehicle, it's interesting to hear what their hot buttons are. And one of the cool features on all the Kias that we don't use, but somebody liked is the smart power liftgate. And you know what that is, where you have the key in your pocket and you set the program in the system in the car. And then you walk up and the tailgate just opens. You don't have to kick your foot underneath or anything like that. So It's kind of cool that you have that feature, which you can turn on and off if you want.
Right.
The wireless phone charger. Pretty cool.
Yep.
Just, you know, put it on there and that charges too. My only complaint about this vehicle, and then we can wrap this up on this $48,000 vehicle, which is a lot, is that the seat track travel on the passenger seat doesn't go back far enough.
On the passenger seat. So Scott was driving. Side.
No, I was riding in. Yeah, he was driving. I was riding. We went to take photos.
Gotcha. Well, you know what? I didn't notice that because I was not in the passenger seat. But it's interesting because in order to get the enough leg room, they probably stop it at a certain point so it doesn't hit the legs of the people in the back seat. The one we had was four captain's chairs. I imagine that's what you had, right?
Yeah, it is. But Our van, the van has a lot more seat track travel.
Does it? Well, if that's your only niggly little problem, baby, we got a good vehicle on our hands. Hang on a sec. We'll take a little break. You're listening to The Drive. We're talking about the Kia Telluride, new SUV. It's the biggest one Kia makes. We'll be right back.
Cancer is the number one cause of death by disease for children in the U.S. today. Since the Austin Hatcher Foundation's birth in 2006, it has grown to provide unique programs to help the children and the families affected by pediatric cancer. Support begins at the time of diagnosis and continues throughout survivorship at no cost to families. Lives touched by the foundation continue to rise each day. But we need your help. Donate, volunteer, or partner with the Austin Hatcher Foundation. Learn how you can get involved. Visit hatcherfoundation.org for more information.
You're listening to The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Our show brought to you in part by Brembo Brakes, the choice of champions. Brembo. BJ Colleen joining us. We're talking about the new Kia Telluride SUV. It is the largest SUV that Kia makes. 7 or 8 passenger configuration. A very nice looking design. Very handsome machine. My wife absolutely dug it. We're going to have to buy one here. I've offered her multiple different vehicles, BJ, and she just keeps coming back to the Telluride, which is funny because, you know, I never know what she's going to like. I bought her a couple of cars in her life, and that was a big mistake. because she'll drive them, but she doesn't like them, you know? And so now it's like, at this stage of our life, after all these years, I really want her to get something that she likes. And she just liked everything about the Telluride.
Well, you know, with your grandkids, you know, it's a perfect vehicle because it's safe and there's tons of room and everything like that. But I got a trivia question for you.
Okay.
You know, this is not Kia's first foray into the large SUV segment. Do you remember the name of their previous one?
You know, I'm trying to think of what it is. I can see it. It was big.
Starts with a B.
Oh, Borrego. No.
That was it.
Borrego.
That's
okay,
it.
Good.
Kia Borrego. That's right. I don't think it was as big as a Telluride, but it just, you know, the problem is it's all about timing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the Borrego came out when the fuel prices, you know, shot through the roof.
And it had a V8. Like, it didn't have a V8.
Yep. It was huge. Yeah. It was a nice vehicle. Everybody went, oh, no.
Right.
I can't afford, you know, something that's got 15 miles to the gallon. Forget right. it. So
well, what kind
it just
of mileage
died on the vine.
Did you get, by the way, driving?
I was getting like 24, 25 on the highway. And, you know, I don't baby these cars, so
yeah.
I was really impressed. I mean, we've gotten 28 in our van, so, and it's funny because people, the couple things that they ask me when they ask about the Telluride is like, what is the quality like? And if I'm, you know, somewhere where I can put them inside, I'll say, get inside, check it out, and they're really impressed. But that's the one thing I think that Kia has had a reputation for, and even though you and I know that that's long gone, I think quality was always an issue, and people are always worried about that. So when you show them a new Kia, they're like, oh my God, I had no idea. Because the one guy that flagged me down in the parking lot owned a Mercedes. He's like, I said, you can get all this. I said, it's 48 grand. He goes, boy, that's a lot less than a Mercedes or a BMW. I said, absolutely. So
yeah, but
I
it think, starts at like 33.9 or something.
Yeah, it starts at like 34, 35. You're right, something like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's even fully loaded, because we know this is how people want their vehicles. People don't want to give up anything. So, you know, they want it, all the bells and whistles, especially if you're somebody coming out of a Mercedes or a BMW or a Land Rover. You know, to have all those features and all that safety and save 20 grand, well, that's going to appeal to everybody.
You know, it's funny because once you've had it, you can never go back. Once you've had comfort and luxury, you can't go back. And I think that this is a mistake that some of the rental car companies, they ought to have like loaded cars that are like the best of everything. The automakers ought to be working with them somehow, because that's ultimately a big test drive when you're renting a car for a few days. You end up, if you loved it, you'd go out and buy one. But,
I was just going to say, it's funny that you mentioned that, because rental cars are really interesting. When you look at the manufacturers, because a lot of them do fleet sales or rental car sales. And you're right. They are like the bottom line entry level cars, which I think I totally agree with you. It's stupid to have, because, you know, you're not really experiencing it. And these guys, they don't maintain the vehicles. I rented a Ford Fusion that was so bad in alignment. It was so out of alignment that the car, I had to turn the steering wheel basically a quarter turn to get it to go straight. And I'm thinking, if you got that car and you hadn't driven a Ford Fusion before, you'd think this thing was a piece of garbage. You know, it was terrible. And I went back, what's funny is I went back and I said, hey, you got an alignment problem. He goes, well, I don't think so. I was like, trust me, you have an alignment problem. How do you know? I'm like, let me tell you how I know this, you know. So it was pretty funny. But,
yeah, right.
but Honda, now Honda doesn't do fleet sales. So it's interesting, because it looks like they have fewer sales than everybody else, but they actually do pretty much, they're at the top in most of their segments, because they don't sell the fleets. They sell the retail. So, and it's great, because nobody's getting in a Honda going, man, this thing sucks. You know, like you get in a rented Dodge Caravan.
Right.
Right? You know, it is.
So. All right. Hold tight. Let me take another break. Okay. Talking to BJ Colleen. Thanks to Kia for letting her drive the car and letting us drive the car. That's really what you need to do. Go out and test drive the new Kia Telluride. If you're thinking about buying an SUV, it will blow your mind. I'm telling you. All right. This is The Drive. Don't forget, check us out on Facebook. You just go to The Drive with Alan Taylor. I am Alan Taylor. She is BJ Colleen, and we'll be right back with more. Stay with us.
Stay tuned. There's more of The Drive with Alan Taylor on the road ahead.
Brembo has been stopping champions on the track, as well as drivers like you and me on the street, for over 50 years. Whether it's UV-coated brake discs, low-dust premium ceramic brake pads, or high-temperature brake fluid, BrembostoreUSA.com is the place to go to buy genuine Brembo OE equivalent replacement brake components. Go to BrembostoreUSA.com to help you achieve that 60-0 braking performance you deserve and expect from Brembo. Brembo, the choice of champions and consumers for over 50 years.
My pal BJ, she is an uptown girl. BJ Colleen, automotive journalist extraordinaire. The only thing that's odd about her is that she drives a minivan. I know.
Hey,
a minivan.
Hey.
You know what? No, I'm not complaining. Actually, Scott drives it. And he's, that's the funny thing. But you know what? Minivans are not faring very well with all the SUV sales. I've heard some rumors that minivans are not doing very well, and but, they may go away, way.
No, I don't think they're ever going to go away. You know, and last year the sales fell by like a 0.5% to about 480,000. So I think that they're here to stay, especially, you know, because people who move a lot of people, especially rental cars, you know, absolutely need to have the space. And that's the one thing that we love about the minivan. Not only is it does it have room to carry everything you need, but when you're inside, you have a lot of room. So if you go on a trip, you know, you've been on a road trip in a small car where you just get fidgety after a couple hours.
Right.
And I mean, when you're in a minivan, you've got a lot of room for your cargo and your stuff and your seats, and it's comfortable. And I'm telling you, you can't beat it. And I know a lot of people who have kids have minivans, but there's a lot of us who they call empty nesters, you know, don't have kids or the kids are gone, that like minivans just because you can do so much stuff with them. As a matter of fact, my cousin's been riding in Scott's long enough that he's probably going to go out and get one because he likes it so much.
You know, I love them. I must say, I love them. They are absolutely the ultimate people moving machine because they're comfortable. They're easy to get in and out of, whether you're in the front or the back. Maybe not so much in the third row, but I've never been back there, so I wouldn't know. But they're wonderful machines. And I remember buying a brand new minivan for my wife. It was a Ford. Oh, what was that Ford that they stopped making?
Windstar.
Yes, the Ford Windstar. I loved it. I loved it. It was like a turquoise green. And I remember when we sold it, I was like, oh, man. I bought my wife went from a minivan when the kids got big enough to a 16-passenger E350 one-ton people mover. It was 15-passenger because when you have four kids, they got four friends, which means you're taking eight kids around. So anyway, the point is that I happen to be a guy that I love all kinds of machines, but I think minivans are an overlooked machine right now in the world today. I understand, of course, you guys own a Kia Sedona, but you've been driving the Toyota Sienna?
Right. I had the Toyota Sienna, which I love getting minivans to do comparisons with. So I got to get in the Honda Odyssey. It's been a while since I've been in it, but I got the Toyota Sienna, the top of the line LTD premium. And, you know, heart attack time, this vehicle topped out as tested is $48,000, which is, that's about 10 grand more than what the Kia was. But, you know, again, when you get this top of the line, you've got every feature that's humanly available on it. So, you know, one thing about minivans that's really nice is you've got those two power sliding doors, you know, and it really comes in handy, you know, because especially when you're in tight parking spaces, you know, my MKC is in the garage next to Scott's van. And I'm telling you, trying to open the doors on both is not possible. But if you want to get in the back seat, you just hit the sliding door and it just goes to the side, you know, so it's just some really nice features.
By the way, did this have the optional vacuum cleaner or that's Honda or no?
No,
that's
Honda and Pacifica have the vacuum cleaner.
Okay, but this one, did you have the optional swing set that pops out the back?
No, I didn't, but I would like to have that if they would make it. That would be a blast.
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to the guys at Yakima Racks.
Yes.
People are putting tents on the roof of their cars these days, and Yakima is like $1,800 for a pop-up tent on the roof of your vehicle. You can put it on a minivan. You can put it on a SUV. It's like the world is changing and it continues to evolve. And I do believe the minivan has been overlooked and maybe gotten a bad rap by not wanting to drive, you know, soccer moms in station wagons. Station wagons almost went to the way of the dinosaur. Minivan's kind of the same thing. Who cares, soccer mom? That's a badge of honor. Right?
Yeah, if they're sad enough to
worry about their that, yeah,
vehicle choice by that, then that's their problem. But you know, exactly. one thing about the Toyota, and you've got to get this because you will not be in the driver's seat. You'll be in the second row because they've got these second row lounge seats. And you pull the handle and the leg area comes up. And the Kia has this too, but the leg, not our Kia, the leg area comes up. And so you've got a leg rest. You can recline the seat so you can move the passenger seat forward. I must have had like 3 feet of leg room in the wow. second row. I mean, you could like, you'd be like, okay, hire a chauffeur.
Because yeah, it's like a Learjet back there.
Oh my God, it was amazing. And it had a rear seat entertainment with a big screen that popped down from the second row. So, I mean, this, as much as people like to drive, this is definitely a passenger car. So if you're a kid and your parents bought a Toyota Sienna, you're going to be very happy in the back. And again, that'll keep you occupied. So your parents will be very happy in the front too, because they don't have to listen to you.
So real quick, how did it compare to your Kia Sedona? Because like you said, this is like $10,000 more. You got a pretty loaded one. The Sienna from Toyota is pretty loaded. For $38,000, for $48,000, do you get that much more for that? Just curious.
You're getting a lot of features, obviously, because ours is 3-4 years old now. But it doesn't have Android Auto and Apple CarPlay. It's got the Intune system still because it's a little bit older. It's got a little bit more body roll than ours. Ours tends to, is a little bit sportier the way they've tuned the Kia. So it's got good power, but again, it's just, it's got a center console I don't like. So it's got, it's an older vehicle, but it's got some nice features. I can't wait till they redesign.
The Toyota Sienna.
Yep.
Really? Okay, well, Toyota is due to redesign quite a few of their vehicles. The Toyota Tacoma needs a little redesign. The Toyota Sienna needs a redesign. But I got to say, man, you look at that Camry today and you're like, what is that? That just landed. I'm sure it's from Back to the Future. You know, I mean, they really got some futuristic designs. BJ, Colleen, thank you so, so much. You're awesome.
Thank you, Alan.
Appreciate
Love it.
My pal, BJ Colleen. I'm Alan Taylor. There's more right after this. Gina was a diner all day,
working for her man. She brings home her bed. It's Dodge Performance Days, where that new car smell gets replaced by the scent of burned rubber. With Dodge Charger and its available best-in-class 485 horsepower, Dodge Challenger Hellcat Red Eye with up to 797 horsepower and 707 pound-feet of torque, and the powerful 7-passenger Dodge Durango. Hurry in for great deals now at Dodge Performance Days. Ford's large regular car vehicle segment. Dodge is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC. Welcome back to The Drive. Now, here's automotive expert, television and radio host, Alan Taylor.
Joining us now is my friend, Josh Hancock, Hollywood car consultant, the man that matches the car with the character in all things film and television. But I know that Josh has been driving a high-performance SUV. And as Carl and I were talking about high-performance SUVs, and BJ drove the Telluride, you drove, as I understand, Josh, the Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quadrifoglio.
That is correct. Now, how did you know?
Because it's written on this piece of paper that they just handed me.
Ah, okay. All right. You know, that time where you used to sit across the street from my house, it just didn't work out.
With binoculars.
So if you're doing that again,
I know.
Cut it out. Cut it out.
First of all, I drove one of these early on. I showed it on television for about 15 seconds, like for one day. It was the fastest SUV on the planet. And then somebody else came out with something a little bit faster. But still, this is right up there with the fastest SUVs in the world.
It is. I think the other thing is that the price point in comparison to the competition that goes that fast is very desirable.
Which is? How much? What is this? 85?
This Porsche is right around 80.
Yeah.
A little north of 80.
Yeah.
For 503 horsepower.
Yeah, 503, by the way, Ferrari horsepower.
Yes, the chassis and the engine on this vehicle, for me, is comparable to anything in the world. I mean, you know, Aston Martin is about to come out with their, not about to come out with, but they have an SUV on the books, and it's called the
really?
DBX. And I was thinking as I drove this Alfa Romeo, I was thinking, you know, this is as good as, I suspect, anything that Aston Martin's going to come out with. That's how impressed I was with this motor and the chassis.
Unless they have changed it, I know that Ferrari actually builds this motor. I know that's going away, but for now...
That is going away,
yeah, right.
But yes. It, and it also didn't have any quirky Italian-ness to it that sometimes we expect from Italian cars. The interior is lovely. I will say, you know, the interface and infotainment is a bit dated.
Really?
And that's where the car lacks a little bit. Not that it won't get everything done, but it could use some upgrades there. But you really don't care because of how good the chassis, suspension. Oh, my God. I drive most everything when I have a press car. I take it to Palm Springs. I go to 210. I make this big loop. When I'm down there, I took it amongst the windmills, actually, and drove it on the sand, which most people don't do. But that road down there, especially at midnight, when you can do 100, 120 miles an hour, closed circuit. I mean, I've heard this. There's a few cars that have been outstanding through the years, and I have to say this is one of them.
So let me clarify. This is the Alfa Romeo Stelvio, and the Stelvio, I think, starts, you know, quite a bit less than the one you're driving, because you're driving the Quadrifoglio, which is the like the high performance model of this, and and you can add like $25,000-$30,000 to the price of the you know the nice one.
Yes, you can actually add $40,000. So you know there lieth a little bit of a difference, because if you take a Porsche and you take the Porsche Macan, which is what this would be up against.
Right.
The Porsche Macan already starts with a base price of 50. Probably just around 70.
Are they that much?
And then if you want to make it as fast as the Alfa, you've got to spend probably 125.
Who? Man.
I mean, you know, if you want the fastest Cayenne, you're approaching $200,000.
But here's the deal. Here's the deal. If you have that need for speed, then how badly you want that speed is directly proportionate to the thickness of your wallet. You can get what you want. I mean, you could buy a Lamborghini Urus or whatever that thing is called. What's that called, by the way?
Right.
I mean, you know.
Right.
It's
Urus.
Yeah. It's just it's a matter of how much money you want to you know dole out. But I have to admit, I've driven this car also, and it was delightful. Anytime you put 500 horsepower in anything, it's just good. Let me ask
you. Well, it
is. Hold it.
It's a little,
Before you get away, I know I have very limited time with you, and I know there's a couple of things going on. I just want to ask you two questions. Enough about the Alfa Romeo Quadrifoglio Stelvio.
Okay.
John DeLorean movie coming out.
Yes.
Alec Baldwin, I saw a picture, looks just like John DeLorean.
You know that they brought the people in from Saturday Night Live who do his makeup to do tests to see how much they could make him look like John DeLorean.
I mean, look just like him. Bizarre.
Alec Baldwin was approached by John DeLorean in the day.
Oh.
About the car.
Really?
Yeah. There's a history there. Yeah. That's why he wanted to do it.
Interesting.
There was a screening at the Peterson, which I missed because I was working last week by the filmmakers, and it opens today in various theaters around the country.
Concours on Rodeo Drive, Father's Day, Sunday. Are you going?
I am taking one of the original Eleanor Mustangs.
Oh, nice.
It's just finished a full rotisserie restoration. That is one of the original hero cars from the movie. Yes, I'll be there.
Nice. What about other car movies and car stuff that is in the movies happening for you right now?
Well, I'm actually in early stages of a film that is a spinoff of G.I. Joe.
Oh, wow.
I will say that much. It's a big tentpole movie. It's going to be shot in Tokyo and Toronto. It's a big, big film. Lots of action. We spent last week talking to different car manufacturers. There will be a car involved. I cannot say more than that.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, happy Father's Day at Rodeo Drive. If you see all our buddies and stuff, tell them I said, hey! Anyway, that's all. Josh, thank you, brother.
Thank you, Alan.
Have fun with your Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quadrifoglio.
I am.
Coming up next, we're going to talk to George Kennedy III. See what he's up to this weekend. It is The Drive. We'll be right back.
Have you ever tried to plan a vacation and the hotel cost, airfare, and pet sitter all add up to one big never mind? Well, it's time to embrace the adventure and go RVing instead. GoRVing.com is your one-stop shop for all things RV camping. Browse the different types of RVs, find a rental agent or dealer near you, and compare the costs. Explore more than 16,000 RV parks and campgrounds nationwide, and even plan your menus for the trip. Find out what you've been missing at GoRVing.com. That's GoRVing.com.
The Drive. I'm Alan Taylor. Thanks for joining us. Hope you're having a great weekend. Happy Father's Day! Holy mackerel, I almost forgot to say that. That's crazy stuff. George Kennedy joining us. Not a father that he's aware of.
That I'm aware of.
Oh, okay. Our show is brought to you in part by Dodge. Domestic, not domesticated. Thank you, Dodge, for sponsoring the show. So, George, we just got done talking to Josh Hancock, who was driving the Alfa Romeo Stelvio Quadrifoglio, 500-plus horsepower. And I know you've got some punification, some small motored thing you're driving. What are you? What are you? Yeah. Well, you know what? Hold on. This whole show has been revolving, for some reason, a bit around high horsepower SUVs. I drove the Ford Explorer ST, the new 2020 cool. Ford Explorer. Can't talk about the driving impressions, but I will tell you the acceleration impression was 400 horsepower out of that EcoBoost V6. Crazy! 400 horsepower with a 10-speed transmission. What transmission does
it's
this...
It's awesome what they're doing these days, yeah.
What are you driving? It's a 2019 GMC Acadia.
Yeah, 2019 GMC Acadia with the new Black Edition appearance package. So, like, it's funny, you know, GMC has been known for Denali forever, and that's like chrome everywhere.
Right.
But if you look at SUVs, Range Rovers and whatever, buyer tastes are kind of moving away from the bling and the chrome, and they're looking to like earth tones and black wheels and blacked out grills and kind of more menacing looks. And, you know, this allows them to sort of tap into that trend.
So that's called monochromatic when it's all one color. And in this case, it's all blacked out and the vehicle's black. By the
way, that's correct.
I'm working on a 73 Blazer. And
oh, my God, that's awesome.
Right? With a full removable hardtop. So it's off right now, full convertible, getting ready to go pick it up right now. Just had new exhaust right. put on it. Chrome. I took the steel wool pads with the soap built into it. What are those called? Steel wool pads, I guess. You know, but I did the chrome. It's been years since I actually took steel wool to chrome because today, and then here's the best part, I steel wooled the whole car.
Oh, wow.
It's been sitting for 10 years, so I'm like, the hell with it. I steel wooled the whole freaking machine. It needs a paint job, so it doesn't even matter. But the point is, it's been a long time since I steel wooled any chrome. Go ahead.
You know what's cool about those K5 Blazers? You know, I had a 99 Tahoe, so it was kind of square body, but a fixed top. A buddy of mine, Craig Fitzgerald, journalist out there, has a K5 Blazer, and he has a removable top, but the thing that saved it, he was ready to sell his. And the thing that changed everything for him was getting one of those kind of bikini cloth tops that right. go on there and sort of attract to like a Jeep soft top. He said right. totally changed the game for him because he's not wrestling with this top, and he left it on all winter long in Boston.
Huh. Really?
Yeah.
Well, I have decided that I will keep mine top off right up until it starts raining, and then I'm going to go ahead and get my buddies, because it takes like 7 guys to put it on.
Yeah.
Because there's always...
Yeah. Well,
there's
the other
always,
thing to watch
you know,
out for is the seals on those. So yeah. if you're taking it on and off a lot, the seal is might start letting in some water, you know. Look, it'll only get water on the backseat passengers, so, you know. Not a big problem.
No. Mine is the full removable top all the way to the windshield.
Oh, up to the windshield.
Full
Dang,
convertible.
Okay, well then,
yeah, your guy had he had the poser one.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
73, I think 73, maybe 74 was the last year they made where it removes all the way from the windshield back. So you literally have a full convertible truck, you might say.
All right. Well, you got to make sure your seals are in check then if you're taking it on and off a lot.
Well, now I won't be. It's like once a year for the entire summer and then put it back on in the winter. But you know what? It's just an old turd. And I don't even care. I was thinking I'm going to restore it. It's kind of got rust here and there. But I did still wool the chrome. And we were talking about this 2019 GMC Acadia. Chrome is something you don't see on vehicles anymore. You know?
Yeah, man. You see it here and there in this car. I mean, you can still get a Denali with chrome all over, but this it was an SLT 1 trim black edition, and the only chrome you really saw was in the shifter. Even in the interior, there was a bit of bright work, but it was brushed aluminum, so it's kind of like a matted finish. So you're still getting sort of a more subdued appearance, and it's a pretty sharp-looking SUV, both inside and out.
Now, let me ask you.
It's not very...
What engine? V6?
So this was the V6. It comes with the base engine is a 4-cylinder, 193 horsepower. This V6 makes 310. And, you know, I knock GM a lot for a lot of things, but I love this V6. You throw this in, anything that they offer, and it'll have enough room power to get out of its own way.
What transmission?
This thing moves pretty good.
What transmission?
6-speed transmission. So really? Still kind of in the transitional, I won't say dark ages, but it's still pretty dated these days for power management.
Yeah,
it's only able to tow like 4,000 pounds.
Ooh.
But it seats up to 7, which is pretty good for a vehicle. It's basically a shortened Traverse,
right?
And you'll notice that shortness if you try to sit in the third row. Third row is only really good for kids.
Yeah,
but it offers a third row, which is nice.
How much money?
So it starts at 29 even. Our tester started at 41 for the SLT all-wheel drive. And with the black appearance package and the dual sunroofs, it was 45 and change.
Cool,
that's kind of getting up there for a midsize SUV, I will agree.
Yeah.
But the all-wheel drive system has a twin clutch system which should make it a little more capable for getting off the beaten path. And, you know, compared to a lot of SUVs out there that kind of can't get out of their own way, it's got a decent amount of cargo space. It's got room for you and your gear. Ours had the rubberized floor mats so you could throw whatever you want to do, kayaking, mountain biking, whatever your weekend lifestyle entertains, throw it in there, you're fine. So it's a pretty good, well-rounded SUV for weekends, and then it made it a decent daily driver during the week.
But I got to tell you, here's what happens, and it happens like every day in the auto industry, is they were at the top of their game with this vehicle, and all of a sudden, Ford comes out with a 2.3-liter EcoBoost that'll tow 5,000 pounds. Four-cylinder, right? That's got 300 horsepower.
What have you done for me?
Yeah.
What have you done for me lately?
And a 10-speed automatic transmission. GMC has got to, up their game now, which is good for the consumers. All right, hold tight. We're getting on the other side of the break. I don't know if you're into Le Mans, but it's the 24 Hours of Le Mans. And we'll talk about that on the other side. Thanks to GMC for letting George drive the Acadia. You can find George Kennedy, cartender, guru, car guru he is, thecargurus.com, Boston Globe and US News and World Report. This is The Drive. Be right back.
Kia Soul, what started as an icon, has evolved into a whole new species. The Soul X line specializes in adventure with a nasty case of restless car syndrome. The high-minded Soul EX is dressed up and kitted out with more tech than we can mention here. And the Soul GT line turbo is a true apex predator with a turbocharged drive to defy. The new species of Soul, the 2020 Soul. Give it everything.
This is The Drive with Alan Taylor.
So our show is brought to you in part by Subaru, the all-new Subaru 3-Row Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Check out the new Subaru. It's like we're talking about SUVs. 19 cup holders. If cup holders is your thing, then Subaru, all with symmetrical all-wheel drive, a fantastic vehicle. 19 cup holders. George Kennedy joining us. George, 19 cup holders. I don't know what you do with all those cup holders.
Think it's enough? You think we've reached a peak cup holder?
You know what, though? You got to hand it to them, man. They got them in the ceiling, on the floor, on the walls. They got one in the glass. I'm joking.
Okay. They know what people want.
That's exactly right. The 24 Hours of Le Mans is this weekend. I'm not a big 24 hours of Le Mans guy. I went to the 12 hours of Sebring and it was like, all right, enough. I'm going to bed. It's like 24 hours. Obviously, it's an endurance
race. Come on, man. This is my favorite race weekend of the year.
Why?
I'm not a huge NASCAR.
Why?
I'm not a huge NASCAR guy.
Yeah.
I'm kind of into Formula One. I love sports car racing because these cars, more than any other car out there, are, you know, half of the cars out there are race cars.
This is the Ironman.
Started life as a sports car.
Right.
This is
the Ironman of racing. Yeah.
Le Mans knows that it's a stress test for a lot of things. So that's where they make rules that sort of help stress fuel economy, help, you know, if you're an automaker and you're like, hey, does this brake part work? You know, you throw it on a Le Mans car and race it for 24 hours. That'll test it. And a lot of really great advancements through the years have come out of this race. There's the Steve McQueen movie, which is like one of my more formative movies in terms of my growth as a car guy. And, you know, they're getting better about coverage. So, you know, before you used to have to go online and find streams of it. Now, you know, I have YouTube TV and I can hop on. It's like Motor Trend TV has coverage of like most of it. It's 24 hours. So you're not going to stay up for all of it.
Right.
But I just love, like, you know, I'll be up throughout the night. You know, I'll crack a beer. I'll watch some of it. I'll get up. I'll watch the rest. Like, the whole weekend is like enveloped in racing. And what's cool too is a lot of the cars are getting cool about identifying themselves in the night. So they're doing these really cool like neon setups. The Ford GT puts neon strips inside that sort of space between the center of the body and the rear wheel pontoons.
Mm.
So there's like very cool looking almost like spaceships in the middle of the night. And these are just some of the pinnacle of automotive performance. And you're watching it. If you're into watching cars and racing and just like automotive performance, you're just getting washed over by this stuff for 24 hours.
So let me ask you now, well, who do you want to win? Are you like rooting for anybody?
You know, it's funny. I really don't have a dog in the race. What I am looking forward to is they made an announcement.
It's a dog in the fight. Come on, come on. Get it right. What,
it could be a race too, you know.
It could, I guess.
Toyota guys have been killing it for the prototype section for a while now. I always love watching the Porsche 911s do their thing.
All right, but what do you know about the new hypercar racing rules for 2021? And explain hypercars to people. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you think supercars, kind of supercar hit its peak with like V12s and Ferraris and Lamborghinis, but there's a level above that, and that's the hypercar. Think Porsche 918, Ferrari LaFerrari, Koenigseggs, you know, Pagani, stuff like that. Really crazy, rare, exotic stuff.
Right.
And Le Mans is responding to that, to the growth of that segment. They're saying, look, you know, maybe the prototype, the top tier race level has kind of gone stale. We're going to interject a little spice into this. And we're saying those road going hypercars are now qualified, maybe qualified to compete with the prototypes in their own race class. And it's going to be called the hypercar class. You know, they'll say you can either do hybrid or not. And there are already automakers looking to get involved. Aston Martin has this concept. It's been out for the last year called the Valkyrie. Mm. That is going to be one of the first entrants in it. Toyota already announced that they're doing a hypercar specifically for this. That Mercedes one, whatever hypercar, that looks a lot like what one of the ideal one of these cars would be. So it's like they kind of knew this class was coming when they developed that. So it's going to be really cool to see what automakers do in terms of, you know, applying the cars to this. And it's just making more road-going cars designed for racing and vice versa.
Right on.
It's more fun to watch.
All right. Well, I guess you can watch it on the interweb somehow. So do a little search for the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Happy Father's Day weekend out there to all you gentlemen, fathers or not. Someday you will be. And you'll appreciate and understand. For me, it's Happy Grandfather's Day. I don't know if there is a day for grandfathers, but George, I wish you a happy Father's Day in advance. Get yourself married. Get a nice woman.
Likewise.
Leave that guy alone. No, I'm joking.
Someday, man.
Thank you for being on the show, brother. You're a friend. I appreciate it.
Cheers, man.
All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the race. See you next week.
The big news from Subaru is the three-row Ascent. It's the biggest SUV from Subaru ever. There's room for 7 or 8 passengers with a choice of second row captain's chairs or bench seating. It'll tow up to 5,000 pounds. It has interior space you need for your whole crew. And it gets you where you want to go with the safety of a Subaru, including standard symmetrical all-wheel drive. The 3-row Subaru Ascent. Love is now bigger than ever. Maximum towing capacity varies by trim level, and trailer brakes may be required. See your retailer for details.